Authorities say the death toll has increased. At least 40 people have now died from a Russian strike on an apartment building in the Ukrainian city of Dnipro Saturday. Officials also say that dozens of people so far have been rescued.
There were also other strikes in the cities of Kyiv and Kharkiv over the weekend. This week, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin meets with his European counterparts to discuss support for Ukraine. Let's now talk to Jeffrey Edmonds. He studies the Russian military at the research and analysis organization CNA, and he's former director for Russia at the White House National Security Council. Jeffrey, when you see this Dnipro attack on civilians, we also know there have been attacks on pipelines and hospitals. How should the international community view these attacks?
Yeah, so I think that it's very evident that Russians do not care about collateral damage when they're conducting these strikes against purportedly critical infrastructure. And there's certainly an aspect of this where the Russians want civilian casualties in an attempt to undermine the Ukrainian ability to resist. And this is something that has been in Russian doctrine for some time, this idea that you could hit critical infrastructure and undermine the willingness of your adversary to keep fighting. I think what it does show is that air defense systems are pretty critical in this war. Without additional air defense assets, the Ukrainians have to make a decision between protecting soldiers in the front lines against Russian aircraft or protecting critical infrastructure. You might have to choose between one or the other, or if you split up and try to cover all of them, you're not covering them as well. And that's why I think air defense systems are probably some of the most important items that we could be giving the Ukrainians.
Russia claims to have taken the town of Soledar, though that is being contested. I mean, if indeed the Russian military has claimed this city, would that be a significant gain?
I don't think it is. First, the city was largely taken by the paramilitary group Wagner, who is owned by Yevgeny Prigozhin. The Russians have really poured a tremendous amount of resources into trying to take this city, but it's not a strategic win for them. What I think it does provide them is some small victory that they can play out politically, but it's not clear that it sets them up to take any more terrain after this.
Okay. There's also been talk in recent days of allies of Ukraine sending tanks. The U.S., Germany, and France have been talking about this. Poland more recently. For the rest of us, kind of who is sending what, and if these tanks eventually come into the battlefield, could it turn the tide?
Right. So I know that, you know, the U.K. is considering sending tanks, or has decided to send tanks. We're sending Bradleys, I believe, which are smaller infantry fighting vehicles, but are still armored forces. And these are important. You know, I was an armor officer for 25 years, but in the armor community, we talk about firepower, maneuver, and shock effect. These systems certainly have, you know, a lot of firepower. And there is something about a kind of a shocking effect. If you're an infantry person facing tanks and armored vehicles coming at you, that's what we think about when we think about shock effect. And I think all those are important. I think the other part of this is that some believe that, well, the situation in Ukraine is fairly static and tanks and armored vehicles are better used when things are fluid. But that misses the point that tanks were actually originally created to take static situations like you have in Ukraine and make them more fluid. So they could be useful for, you know, changing the lines and exploiting any kind of breakthroughs the Ukrainians could have.
And just stepping back, Jeffrey, how important will 2023 be in this war? I ask because, you know, some analysts are suggesting it will be a critical one because help from countries like the United States may not be guaranteed beyond 2023.
I do think it's a critical year. I think for the Russian forces right now, maintaining kind of a static presence benefits them in that they're trying to rebuild and regroup and build, you know, military capacity through the mobilizations and things of that nature. For Ukraine, this is essential in getting U.S. and Western military equipment up front, you know, in their ranks early so they can take advantage of Russian weaknesses before the Russians are able to build back up. I think the real thing coming out of this is how both forces look in the spring through the winter and how well each side is able to sustain themselves. If the Russians aren't able to sustain themselves as well, maybe the Ukrainian forces could take advantage of that and actually make some gains in the spring. So I agree. I think that 2023 is going to be pretty critical.
If this drags on, Jeffrey, does it favor one side or the other?
I think that's hard to say. So these attacks by Russia against Ukrainian infrastructure are going to have long-term detrimental effects. It's not clear how well the Russian side are going to be able to continue to maintain their combat power. So it's just very hard to tell at this point. I think that if Western assistance continues across the spectrum, not just military hardware, but also helping them maintain their infrastructure and energy and things like that. I think the Ukrainians have a good chance of really contesting Russian gains here over the long term.
That's Jeffrey Edmonds. He studies the Russian military at the Research and Analysis Group, CNA. Jeffrey, thank you as always.
Thanks for having me.